Welcome back to the show. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Hope your day is going well. If you live in the Minneapolis / St. Paul area, you are having a blue chip day. The weather is spectacular. I'm looking out the window when I can, admiring the beautiful sunshine and the gorgeous leaves and the beauty of God's creation. It's fantastic because I know what's next, and it starts with a W, which is not exciting for me because I'm an avid indoorsman, so I'm really driven indoors in the winter, but more so than usual. But they say it's going to be a balmier winter, which I'm looking forward to. So I want to thank Rich Stanek for coming on the show and George Fraser, my co-host from Real Recovery. So the hits keep rolling on. Colin Hansen's now my guest. He's on our studio line, the editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. I can't have him on enough. I just enjoy him whenever he comes on. How are you, Colin?
I'm doing well, Bill. I'm glad to know you're having some good weather. We've got some good weather here in Birmingham, Alabama as well.
What's the tempy there today? Is it in the 70s?
Yeah, mid-60s.
That's not bad.
So not bad. Got to say, I was back home in South Dakota a little bit ago. We went from about 85 to 35 overnight. I was like, this is my home.
Where in South Dakota?
Southeastern South Dakota, northwest of Sioux Falls, not too far from about Interstates 29 and 90.
Nice.
In the grand scheme of things. Visiting the family.
Nice. Are your folks living there still?
Yeah, absolutely. My dad's a farmer and my mom's a retired preschool special ed teacher, so they get to listen. You're on the radio.
That's so nice.
Where they live, so they get to listen.
Yeah.
They love your show.
Yeah, so your dad knows all about hard work, doesn't he?
That's true. Tried to instill some of that in me. I just wish I were any good at farming. Man, I was terrible at that. So I had to do things like do radio shows. So we all find our calling.
That's true. So let's talk today about how Christians and why Christians need to be set apart in the world. And I'm always fascinated when I'm in Amish community and I see the Amish, because they're so distinctively set apart from everything else. And I'm not saying that the Amish lifestyle is the good lifestyle to lead, but they're certainly they lead a very distinct life. And I think sometimes Christians, we kind of blend in with the rest of the world, don't we?
Yeah, so one of the things I've been thinking about lately is there's actually a book that I highly recommend. It's called Destroyer of the Gods. It's written by a scholar named Larry Hurtado. Some of it's a little bit scholarly, but generally speaking, I think it's one that a lot of people would be interested in. But he goes and he describes the early church, and he's trying to explain, how did this gospel spread so quickly? How did it become this dominant religion in the Roman Empire? And I was just thinking about this recently with the example of the Amish, because one of the things that he describes in that book is that the early Christians were the early Christianity was both accessible and odd. So what you see with the Amish is that the Amish are so clearly odd. They're so clearly different. They drive, they're doing the horse and buggy. They cook differently. They farm differently. They worship differently. They do all kinds of things differently. Now, in some ways, that actually is appealing, like what you're talking about there. And I think a lot of Christians are waking up to realize that we need to be more set apart and more different from the culture. But what was also interesting is that Christians spoke, I guess you could describe it as the idiom of the age. They didn't necessarily dress differently. They used the same language as other people. They lived and they worked in many of the same ways as other people. And so Hurtado explains the early church was both accessible and odd. And I think that's a good way for us to think about it. We're going to, by necessity, we're going to be odd because we're not going to believe the same things. We're not going to do the same things. The Amish, one of the most appealing things, remember years ago they had that horrible tragedy with a shooter who killed a bunch of children in the school. It was just so terrible. And the world, as they were watching, saw these families pray for the family of the murderer and offer forgiveness. And that was odd. That was odd. And yet in some ways it was actually appealing. But I do also think generally for the rest of us, we're not necessarily going to sound different from other people or look different from other people. We're going to be accessible. We're going to be in the world. And I guess you could just go right back to Jesus himself, and we're in the world but not of the world there.
Yeah, so Colin, maybe we should start a new meme. So odd is the new cool. How about that?
Well, what's interesting is, as I was thinking about this, Bill, I mean, so many people, like, you'd think this is a great time to be an outcast or to be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about the ad campaigns, have it your way, or just do it, or believe in something so much you're willing to sacrifice everything for it. So in this way, you actually would kind of think that this would be appealing for Christians, and maybe it is. The challenge is when everybody's having it their own way, and everybody's just doing it, and everybody's doing whatever they feel like. It's actually more like the book of Judges, when everybody does what's right in his or her own eyes, and the new form of conformity is actually people just doing whatever they feel like, which is not really, certainly not what we're calling people toward and we're called to do ourselves as Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's a weird period of of not conforming, but not conforming is the new conforming in this kind of strange society that we live in.
Yeah, and if you want to be set apart, do something really excellent. Just be excellent at what you do. You know, there's so many people that, you know, they want to be unique today, and I think, well, if you get 17 tattoos and, you know, piercings on your face, you're not unique. You just look like everyone else that does that.
Well, and I'll tell people, especially in my church, and they're wondering, how do I start conversations, or how do I help people know about Jesus? And I say, you know what? It's actually not that difficult. Just try refraining from gossip. Try refraining from complaining about your family members, or complaining about the weather, or complaining about your boss.
Yeah.
Just try doing that. Try asking your friends and your coworkers, just ask them real questions and stop and take some time and say, how are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, I want to know, and how can I help you do that? And then remember the things, follow up with things, pray for them, follow up with that afterward. And then when you're tasked with doing certain things in your job, do them well, show up on time, work hard, be above board in your ethics. I don't think this is that complicated. If you do those things, you will really stand out.
Yeah,
but you're not going to stand out in ways that are going to be offensive to people, like you're hurting them or anything. It'll be odd. They might be upset at you. But it's not that hard. You'll stand out. People will start asking you questions.
Yeah, Colin, it's what you say and it's what you don't say. And what you don't say could be just as important as what you do say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just that one, applying the book of James here, just watching our tongues.
Yes.
There, if you're not, I mean, I remember my wife years ago was so inspired at her workplace. It was funny. She was working at the headquarters of an office supply store the same time the TV show The Office was popular, so it was pretty funny. But she was just this Christian man was so, like, she was so admired him because he actually, I think he was going to our church at the same time. She's like, it was so different. He never disparaged his family. He never complained about his wife. He honored his wife and how he spoke about her. But that's just not what we see in the media. That's not whatever happens on the sitcoms that we see. They're always complaining about these things, and that seeps into our everyday life. And so just like what she said right there, just not saying certain things is just marks you out as being so different. And, yeah, it'll offend some people because they always want to drag you into that kind of debauchery.
Mm-hmm.
But other people will say, wow, that's actually really appealing. There seems to be a certain kind of peace that you have and a contentment that you have. And they will want to know where that comes from, and you'll give us a chance to testify to Christ.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about this being set apart and just trying to I love this odd, this idea of being a little bit odd. But ever since we've been a kid, we've wanted to fit in, and we've wanted to be liked.
Yeah, I think that's one of the first things have to realize.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't bother it doesn't bother me, but you like me, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, good.
Of course.
All right.
I mean, I think Jen Wilkin does a lot of teaching on parenting for the Gospel Coalition and a number of different other places. I've learned a lot from her talking about this. Her kids are kind of college age right now. But she said what we need to do is especially to raise up families that recognize they will be aliens in this world. So she talks about raising up an alien child. And so that's a little bit of that accessible and odd. It'll be like we're on this world, but it's as if we're living for and from another world. We're aliens in that regard. And it's amazing the difference that that kind of tone sets. If you're early on, you're telling yourself and you're as a leader in the family that our family is going to be different. And you communicate that to the children. But I think especially it is difficult for parents among all people because they want their kids to fit in. They don't want their kids to be seen as odd. But I can envision very few situations today where somebody is going to be a faithful Christian growing up and not be seen as odd or not be seen as alien to a certain extent, not because they're just weird or whatever, but because they simply will refrain from engaging in those things that everybody else engages in. But not just refraining, but also they're going to do and say positive and encouraging things that other people don't say. And so that's one thing that I think especially a lot of us as parents just have to nail down early on. Our family, we're going to have to be different. Our families are going to have to be different for the sake of our children being able to understand that they belong to Christ. He bought our lives and our eternities for a price. And he calls us then to lay down our lives and to pick up our cross and to follow him. That's odd in this world, but it's our basic command.
Yeah. Colin, every once in a while, it's fun to quote Dr. Seuss. He said, "Why fit in when you were born to stand out?" That's got to have a strong application for the Christian life as well.
Yeah, proverbial. I mean, wisdom there. If we're going to testify to a risen Savior, we're going to have to be different. And I think I think we should always be speaking. Our speech should always be seasoned with that salt of the gospel. We're always telling people about Jesus, but people are going to be looking. They're going to be looking to see if that matches up with our lifestyle. They're going to see if it actually makes a difference for us. And I think that's sort of what we might think of as perhaps the adornment of the gospel, the changed life, the abundant life. Jesus said he came to bring us abundant life. And I think that's very appealing to people who are looking for life in the world, but only finding discouragement and despair. We can show them there's a better way.
Mm-hmm. So we need to be in the world, but we have to have ourselves not be of the world. And I suppose there's so many different ways we can do that. If you got into a golf foursome and after 15 holes, the other three guys said to themselves, "Boy, this Colin guy never tells any of the dirty jokes that we're telling."
Yeah, like I said, it's not as difficult as it would appear. It depends on what neighborhood you're in, mm-hmm. but sometimes just simple neighborliness is different. Just taking an interest in people, looking out for people in your neighborhood who, not to trigger you here, Bill, but who can't dig out from underneath the snow, but taking care of them and being able to shovel their driveways or use your snowblower over there on their driveways to help them to get out. Like there are things like that, that if you live in just a good neighborhood that's filled with common grace and, then praise God. That. But in many places, there isn't necessarily that thoughtfulness because we're all so wrapped up in our own lives. It just is amazing how much you can stand out by simply doing these acts of kindness and thoughtfulness and care. And eventually people do want to know who and what motivates you to be able to do that. And you say to them, I'm not a Christian because I'm good. That's something we always have to be careful of, that we're not just telling people that Christianity is about being good. They're like, no, I'm a sinner who's saved by grace. And because of that, then I'm called to, and I have the privilege of being able to serve others. I mean, just think about this. We're called to live in such a way that we consider others more important than ourselves. How much do you see that in your neighborhood today or at your workplace or even sometimes at your church? How would things be different if we just did, as the Apostle Paul said in Philippians 2, to have in us the mind of Christ, which belongs to us, and to consider others as more important than ourselves? These are big things, but they're not always done like through some spectacular means. It's just the everyday stuff.
Right. Again, Colin, a simple truth spoken clearly So appreciate what you're bringing to the show today. Let me take a little break. When we come back, more with Colin Hansen, editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. We'll be right back. Colin Hansen is my guest. He's the editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. We're talking about how Christians need to be set apart from the world, but not we need to be in the world, but not of the world. And so, Colin, let me ask you about starting with the church. What can we learn from what the book of Matthew teaches about being set apart in the church?
Well, one of the things that's so significant about the book of Matthew, let's just take, for example, I mean, you have the full Sermon on the Mount in Matthew, which is interesting. There's a lot of discussion about that. Some people will tell you the Sermon on the Mount is more or less sort of a long list of things that sound great, but that we're not capable of being able to do. So the real point, and really the only point of it, is to help us to despair and to call out in, you know, for salvation from Christ. In that, and I do think you listen about this and you think about what it says about murder, and it's like, well, it's the same thing if you've murdered somebody as if you hate somebody in your heart and you despair. You're like, how can we actually do this? I mean, how does this actually function? So we do need that substitutionary sacrifice of Christ to be able to help us in that regard. But I think one of the things that's just so significant to me is you look at the Beatitudes. The Beatitudes are so incredibly, in Matthew 5 there, they're so incredibly countercultural. I mean, I think we've maybe just heard them in church for so long, and they kind of become part of that religious noise of our lives. But this is nothing less than the creator and sustainer of all things telling us that the world is upside down from what we think. Like, blessed are the peacemakers, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the meek. I mean, all these things are just so counterintuitive, and I think we miss some of that significance when we're looking there. But one of the things I notice a lot is that it kind of depends on which church you're in, and I wrote about this in a book called Blind Spots, Becoming a Courageous, Compassionate, Commissioned Church. I noticed that different churches tend to like certain of the Beatitudes, like, blessed are you when you are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Okay, well, some churches, they can get on board with persecution, okay? Like, that's, you know, standing up for Christ. Mm-hmm. And there'll be some other churches that can get on board with the poor in spirit part or the meek part. I mean, just seems like we tend to pick and choose the Beatitudes, but there's no sense in which they're being divided. They're all together. So I think we see so clearly from the book of Matthew this truly countercultural vision for this community called the church, where Jesus Christ is the head, and that his sacrifice on the cross and his resurrection is constituting, is drawing together. This is a group that is truly going to stand out in the world. But we remember one significant thing from Matthew. Matthew is written to Jews. And so these Jews are still, in many cases, they're still worshiping at the time in the temple. This is pre-70 AD, the destruction of the temple. We're seeing a lot of similarities. They're still preaching in these ways. They're still using the same language. Like I said, we go back there to being accessible, and they're in the temple courts. They're teaching there. They're showing what this new life is going to look like. And at the same time, we see that, boy, it is so different from what people like Matthew himself, you know, were expecting from things. And I love that also. One last thing to mention there. You look at the disciples, and one of the things you see among the disciples, you see compromisers like the tax collector in Matthew. You see others like the zealot in there. You see all of these different people who have all these different political views being drawn together, some who believe we should assimilate, some who believe we should separate, some who believe we should fight the government. And Jesus brings them all together. And I think what an opportunity we have in the church who follow and claim Christ as our head to be able to show the world a community that draws all of these people together and doesn't just affirm them along the same lines that the rest of the world tends to gather. So such a compelling vision that we get there in the Gospel of Matthew of this new community called Christians.
I love it. Now, we've talked about the perspective of the church. Let's talk about individualism. And would you comment on expressive individualism? What does that mean?
Yeah, so this is a concept that I cannot emphasize enough, because this is the source of so many of our difficulties in the culture and even so many of the difficulties in the church. Let me give you an example here. So one of my friends, Trevin Wax, he writes for us at the Gospel Coalition. He's one of our columnists. He wrote about this recently. He said, this is what expressive individualism means. It's not going to be the kind of thing that empties your churches, but it will totally change the expectations people have when they come to your church, meaning that they will interpret everything that you teach according to this criteria. Does this make me feel good about myself? And is this affirming to me in the decisions and the choices and those feelings that I value there? That's the expressive component. There's many good and godly things about individualism, but it's that expressive part in there that shows that teaches in this culture, just think about almost any Disney movie yeah. you can come up with. This is basically the message you're going to get in every single one of them, that you're not to derive your identity from any authority, not from your parents, not from your family, not from your history, and certainly not from your religion. You're on a quest to be able to discover yourself by looking within, and then it's everybody else's job to be able to affirm your autonomous choices from the outside. This is so pervasive in our culture. I mean, we had one of the most popular TV shows of all time, Oprah, that was dedicated to basically this philosophy. So it's so like dominant in our culture. Sometimes we don't recognize that it actually comes into our churches. It changes our expectations of our churches, and it makes that kind of discipleship, that lay down your life and pick up your cross and follow me discipleship, boy, does it make it very difficult to be able to comprehend. You read the Bible, you're like, oh, this is a whole different – yeah, it is. It's very countercultural to a culture of expressive individualism that we have today.
Yeah. Now, Colin, because simplicity is our theme today – to me, that sounds a little bit like intellectual nonsense. You don't think for yourself. You kind of align yourself with values that already exist.
Yeah, it is. It's a pervasive lie. It's a pervasive lie that doesn't work. I mean, it puts you on this treadmill. Expressive individualism puts you on this treadmill that's always looking deeper within and deeper within and deeper within, and it's constantly changing because we can't trust. I mean, the Bible teaches us very clearly that the heart is desperately wicked and deceives us because we're born into sin. But expressive individualism flips that around and says, you are pure and you are good. You just need to discover that within yourself. And if anybody tells you that you're not good, then that's bad. Like, that's the only bad in the world, is to tell other people that they're not good. What this actually leads to is a culture of narcissism, and it becomes extraordinarily selfish. It becomes extraordinarily divisive. And I think if you understood the kind of dominant philosophies of our era as being expressive individualism giving way to this culture of narcissism, it would go a long way to explain why we have the problems that we have today, and the opportunity for the church, if we'll be so bold as to follow Jesus and to wean ourselves off that narcissism and off that expressive individualism.
Colin, we just have a minute or so left, but I would say the world is probably craving a countercultural community.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things we talk about a lot, our vice president, Tim Keller, talks a lot, is that we are intended in the church to be a counterculture for the common good. We are meant to be different from the world for the sake of the world, because we know the creator and the redeemer and the sustainer and the future, once and future king of the world. And so for the sake of our neighbors, we're intended to live as if we belong to another kingdom, though as we seek to be good citizens of this kingdom. So, I mean, it's a beautiful vision. It's a vision that's ours in Christ, and I was eager to see other churches to be able to take it up and to see the world compelled, as they always have been, by Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Colin, I love having you on the show. I appreciate you and your passion and the way you think, and you always talk in a way that I walk away with something that I can think about and put in my pocket, so thank you.
Well, thanks, Bill. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, and then get on your internal memo at the Gospel Coalition and send Jen Wilkins and Trevin Wax a memo saying I want them on the show.
All right. I'll do it. I'll always recommend that.
Okay.
They're great.
Thanks a lot. All right. Colin Hanson's been my guest, editorial director for the Gospel Coalition. We'll take a little break, and then in hour two, Dr. Greg Borgon's going to be with me. Looking forward to that. And then Rob Bluey, editor of the Daily Signal, will be with me in hour two as well. All ahead, coming up on Afternoons with me, Bill Arnold. Be right back.